Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the AfriCast. My name is Brendan Lotz, and joining me today is Clinton Matos.
Hello, everybody.
And Robin Lichetti.
Howdy.
How are you guys doing this week?
Alive still, hot still.
Yeah, it was a pretty hot week.
Still counting the days until the end of the year.
Yeah, this has been a very, very long year. I too am counting the days. And thankfully, there's only like a month and a bit left. Not even. I think we have just, tomorrow will be a month until we close for December. But yeah, can't believe that it's already the end of 2020. It feels like it started.
I hope all the bad stuff just goes out with the year.
I don't think it will. I don't think the passage of time has any effect on the real world. So,
don't say that. Don't bring logic into this.
Right. Robin, you've got some news about Google and its RCS messaging. This seems very interesting.
Yeah. So for some time now, Google has been trying to work on a messaging platform. And today it's rolling out in, I guess, kind of a beta form. It's rolling out across the globe, with the exception of Russia and China. There are, I guess, two interesting elements to this announcement. The first is that they are now adding RCS support to this messaging platform. It's called Android Messages. We have links to the actual platform itself, where you can download it and check it out for yourself. So RCS, if people may not know, that's Rich Communication Services. So this is a standard of messaging that is seen as the potential successor to SMS. Whether that's going to happen one day, there's still a few hurdles and a few, I guess, logistical elements that need to take place, specifically as it refers to how carriers and networks are going to deal with RCS over SMS. I think SMS is still a de facto form here, purely for the fact that it allows these carriers and networks to engage whether consumers like it or not, it's able to allow them to engage with their customers. So actually, back to the messages announcement itself. So like we said, Google are introducing RCS to the platform, and as a part of that, they're also adding end-to-end encryption, which is a really nice feature to have. It's the reason why WhatsApp and Telegram proved so popular. And yeah, now Messages has it. And it is quite interesting because if, for example, RCS becomes the new standard and now end-to-end encryption will also become the default for the Messages platform, it adds a far higher layer of security and privacy to the mix. So yeah, a potentially important development as far as Google and its Messages platform goes.
Awesome. I'm quite keen for RCS to be rolled out a little bit further than it has. But like you say, Robin, there's a lot of logistical issues behind it. Primarily, I think the biggest one is that networks have to enable it. It's not just the user. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see if it becomes more widely adopted. Moving on, the past 2 weeks, or rather the past month, has been a bit of a crazy one as regards game releases. I, for one, am very thankful that Cyberpunk 2077 was delayed, because we had Watch Dogs Legion, we had Assassin's Creed Valhalla, and last week we had Destiny 2 Beyond Light, which is the latest expansion for Destiny 2. And it was billed as a pretty big expansion, and rightly so. It introduces an entirely new location. But at the same time, a whole bunch of destinations were put into something called the Destiny Content Vault, which means that they aren't accessible in-game, but Bungie may or may not bring them back in the future. Those places are Titan, Io, Mercury, and the Leviathan big spaceship where a number of raids took place. But Europa is a weird place. That's the new location that's there in Beyond Light. It's a moon of Jupiter, just like Io was. But this one is a bit strange because there are many, many secrets here. It's a bit more developed than Io was in terms of the civilization that was there in the Golden Age as part of the story, if you're aware of that. And it's a really strange place, but it's a really nice environment as well. One of the cool things is that there's a weather system in place, so you could be walking around and all of a sudden there's a blizzard. and you can't see 2 meters in front of you. It's quite nice and adds a bit of mystery to it. But what I really wanted to talk about was the player experience, which since launch has been... It's left me wanting, and as a veteran player, I've been in two minds about recommending this expansion. But yesterday, Bungie came out with an announcement that kind of changed my tone quite a bit. So, to give you a brief idea of what happened, with the launch of Beyond Light, a whole bunch of gear was sunset. Now, that means that some of the gear in the game can't be infused to a higher power level, which means that you can't take it into some activities and use it. So, for instance, there were three weapons that were really problematic in the PvP side of the game. And balancing those weapons became a really, really difficult, if not impossible, feat for Bungie to get right. So what they did instead was create the sunsetting thing. But as a result, a whole bunch of weapons that weren't problematic became useless overnight. And with the launch of Beyond Light, there wasn't really a big enough pool for players to get new and exciting gear, or new and exciting weapons, rather, which is kind of one of the draws of Destiny, is getting new guns and new gear that are exciting. And, I mean, when you're still getting gear that was introduced, I think, like 3 years ago at this point, it doesn't feel good. So what Bungie has announced is that they will be removing all legendary weapons, which are the weapons and gear that are affected by this, that will hit their infusion cap at the end of the latest season. They're adding in a whole bunch of new weapons from the previous two seasons, and they're changing the weight drop of weapons so that newer stuff is more likely to drop than older stuff. Now, this is coming through as a hotfix in next week, November the 24th, so this is really, really nice to see. However, my opinion about this expansion will rest on how well the solution works. So if you're looking for a review of Beyond Light, it's going to take a little while longer because, yeah, this is a very strange expansion. There's a lot happening, and then there's the raid race that's happening this weekend, where there's a suspicion that something else is going to happen within the world that will unlock some things for other players, even if you don't participate in the raid. So, yeah, it seems like it's going to be an interesting next 2 weeks in Destiny. And once we have a better idea of what weapons and stuff look like, then I'll make a call as to whether we can recommend it or not. So far, it's fun. But I wouldn't recommend dropping the full price of the expansion just yet until we know a bit more. But yeah, that's it for Destiny. Clinton, you've got some news about a Hitman game.
Yes. Probably. I just want to say before we get on to that, I'm glad I don't play MMOs anymore because it sounds exhausting to try and keep up with anything. I used to play Warframe very much back in the day, but that's an addiction story for another time. So... IO Interactive, or IOI, as I call them, because they were the bad guys in that one bad book, they got the 007 license. They are making a James Bond game. Aside from that being really good news, they've also announced it in a very strange way. The game doesn't even have a name yet. It's called Project 007, and they've made very clear to say that this is a working title. So, yeah, we have a game that has no title yet, and they are looking for developers to actually make the game. Now, that doesn't mean there's no one working on it. I'm just saying that IO is actually looking for people, and they've put through a lot of open positions on their careers portal on their website. By my count, there are 16 openings to work on the Project 007 game. Again, we'll link to all of this, and I actually put a link to the careers portal. And they have, you can sort the open positions by projects, and you can get Project 007. And they're looking for a lot of people, 16, like I said, from a gameplay programmer, senior concept artist, senior character artist, lead game designer, gameplay animator, lead cinematic animator, gameplay director, AI programmer, and a few more. They are looking for a lot of people to make this game.
So, do they just have wireframes at the moment?
Maybe, dude. This might be one of those things where they get the license and then they immediately announce it. They're like, hey, we got the license. We're making a game. And the only real thing we know about the game is that it will be an origin story for James Bond, because you will go through the process of earning your 00 status, And I remember in Casino Royale, that that movie actually started with 007 getting his 00 status, if I'm remembering correctly. So they're probably not going to go off of the latest movies, the Daniel Craig movies. They say it's wholly original. So, I mean, I just contradicted myself. We know it's not going to be going off of those movies. So this is going to be interesting. I think a lot of the games in the past have been partially based on the movies. And we don't know what an original one could look like. And everybody loves Io. A lot of people have pointed out that Hitman is basically James Bond anyway. You're a guy in a suit. You're very good at killing people. You have to dress, you know, very snazzily. That's not a word, but I'll use it anyway. You have to look very nice, and then you have to sneak into a highfalutin establishment with lots of armed guards, and then you have to do a mission and get out. That is the plot for most James Bond adventures. Yeah. So they already have the blueprint for a James Bond outing, but we don't know how that's going to pan out. And that's all I really have to tell you right now. They say that they've put up a teaser trailer, but it's just that opening shot of the gun barrel where it focuses on Project 007. So I don't know how that can be a teaser. They don't show anything. So I'm excited about this. I don't really like the past Hitman games because they're basically puzzle games at the end of the day, I think. But apparently the new ones are really good, and I haven't had a chance to play them yet, so maybe I'll play them before Project 007 comes out. And I have a link to all of that. If you are in the market for a new job, you might want to apply to IO. They are looking for people. If you want to work on James Bond, this is your chance.
Just on that, Hitman 2 is a very, very good game. If you spot it on sale in December, I would highly recommend it. It is still, like you say, it's a puzzle game, but it's a lot. It's a very, very well done. And I don't really like 007 at all. I can take it or leave it. Don't really care. But the fact that IO Interactive is working on this game has me very, very curious.
Yeah, a lot of people have said the same thing. They just love whatever these developers do.
Yeah.
And they're willing to back it. Oh, and also IO isn't just the developer. They're also the publisher.
Oh, wow.
They may change in the future. Again, this is some, you know, game development behind the baseball stuff. But sometimes a developer will act as their own publisher for a while, and when they're further into development, they will then seek a publisher to help them distribute the game. So they may not be the publisher when the game's finished and ready to launch, but right now they are doing both duties.
Right. Moving on to this week's Full Fat Podcast. We talked about it a little bit last week, but this week, now that it's out, we can talk a bit more about it. And that is, of course, the Sony PlayStation 5. Robin, you've been reviewing this console. You're probably the best person to review this console, as you're a longtime PlayStation user. And that makes it sound like it's a drug. I'm not suggesting that you mainline PlayStation, but maybe to kick things off, what's your experience been like with the console thus far?
Yeah, so I guess I've been a week into my fix of PS5. So I guess the review, or rather the launch of the device, comes at a really interesting time. I guess in the lead up, there have been a lot of delay announcements as far as upcoming game titles go as a result of COVID, and both the PS5 and the Xbox Series X/S have both launched at a time where there hasn't really been, I guess, the same kind of fanfare as there was previously, say for other next-gen console launches.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is a bit odd to kind of be playing the PS5 right now on a few different fronts. So I guess before we get to, I guess, the elements that I talked about in my review, it's worthwhile just talking about the console itself. I think that it's proved rather divisive as far as the design goes. I know that it proved rather meme-worthy when Sony first revealed it, liking it to a fancy-looking air conditioner that you might stick in your room somewhere. But personally, I'm actually a big fan of the design. Again, I've kind of noted several times that there is a certain architectural quality to it, regardless of whether you're placing it horizontally or vertically. That said, it is a massive console. It's about 1.5 times larger than the PS4, and it's also pretty hefty. So it comes in at around 4.5 kilograms, which is rather large. And I mean, the dimensions itself, you're going to have to find a special place to put this thing. And one of the things I've also noticed is that if you are going to be placing it horizontally, placing it inside, say, of a little nook in a plasma unit, for example, may not be the best thing, because Sony has kind of noted that those kind of smaller spaces aren't ideal, specifically as it refers to airflow, because you may potentially be overheating the console as a result. I haven't noticed any issues on that front yet, but for right now, I've kind of been sticking to the vertical option, because that essentially means I'm able to secure the new stand via screw, and I'm happy that everything is nice and secure and upright.
So before we get on, Robin, I just want to stick with, you know, horizontal and vertical stuff, because the stand is really over-engineered, it seems. This isn't just a flat box where you can put on one side or the other. You have to do a lot of work, actually.
Yeah, especially if you want to do it vertically. So you're going to need a screwdriver. Or I guess we did a little how-to. You can also use a coin if you want to, but that doesn't really seem like you're doing a 12,000 Rand piece of hardware justice if you're going to be sticking a coin in there.
Well, used all my coins to buy the console. I don't I have to use the screwdriver.
I'm surprised you're still using coins in this day and age. But yeah, like you mentioned, it is a bit of an odd aspect. Previous consoles, the PS4 and PS3, they could just place however you wanted to do. As for why Sony has chosen to do this, it obviously has to do with the design of the actual frame, the wide frame that sits around the central unit of the PS5 that has a slight curvature to it. So placing it on its side vertically simply isn't possible. You're going to have a lopsided console that's going to wobble if anything shakes around it. So yeah. Again, I'm not too sure what the choice was behind the decision, but it's one of those things that it is what it is. I personally think that you probably want to go for the vertical orientation purely because, one, there's a screw that you have to secure in, and two, there's a little screw cover that's at the bottom of your PS5 that you take out. That little component is so small, I can already tell people are going to lose it. It's not an essential part of the console itself, but if I've just spent 12 grand, I don't want to be losing anything.
Yeah.
That's kind of the elements around the stand itself. As for performance and things like that, it's proving difficult to kind of give a proper indication. So I'll talk first about things like fan noise and those kind of things. As far as we've kind of seen so far for the review itself and of the past week or so, this thing is silent. It makes no noise whatsoever, which is quite a feat considering how noisy the PS4 in particular can get. So in my own kind of at-home setup, I've got a fan going when I'm not recording podcasts, of course. The PS4 that I use as well, that makes as much noise as that fan does that I use to cool down my room. So thankfully for the PS5, now we don't have to worry about those kind of things. How that kind of fares perhaps 6 months down the line, a year down the line, even 6 years down the line, which is how old my PS4 is, it still remains to be seen. But for right now, out of the box, it's not noisy at all.
Robin, before you go on, I just want to talk about you're saying 6 months from now, because usually what happens is that those problems with noise are usually caused by dust getting in the system. But I saw in the teardown of the PS5, there's actually a system in place where there's a little port inside of the PS5, which is supposed to be accessed by users. This isn't something where you send it back to where you bought it and they do it for you. You lift up this little flap and you're supposed to put compressed air into that flap and it will blow out all the dust. So they've actually thought about, you know, problems with the old consoles and how they can fix them. So that's good. It should, you know, in theory, this is just guessing. We are a few days after the launch, not even a month. Hopefully this means that as the console gets older, it doesn't get louder.
I really hope that channel isn't touching any vital components, because I can just foresee somebody putting down a can of compressed air and there's a little bit of water vapor in there.
Yeah, I'm sure they thought of that.
I hope they have.
I think considering this is a unit that we've only received for review and is not owned by us, I'm not keen to open up anything or use compressed air on anything right now. I think perhaps if hopefully one of us sell a kidney and buy a PS5, we can have a look at it ourselves. But for right now, I don't want to crack that thing open at all. I guess shifting back to the performance, like I've mentioned, it's a bit difficult to really get an idea of how good the PS5 is, purely for the fact that there aren't a lot of truly next-gen launch titles available. We have been lucky enough to be given three different titles. That's Marvel Spider-Man, Miles Morales, Demon's Souls, and Sackboy. Of the three, they all kind of have elements of next-gen, but aren't truly next-gen, if that makes sense. So what I've found so far is that there are essentially two performance settings. Specifically for the Spider-Man titles, there's the performance mode, and if I remember correctly, it's called the fidelity mode. The fidelity one, that has your frame rate at 30 FPS. It also enables elements like ray tracing, enhanced visual effects, and those kind of things. Then the performance mode, that ups things to 60 frames per second, but then you're not getting any ray tracing.
Sorry, Robin, fidelity mode, isn't it also 4K?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, that's an important thing to mention, because it's not just, you're not giving up all those frames just for ray tracing. You're also getting 4K, and then performance is 1080p.
Yeah, I see that. I've been noticing a couple of reviews. People choose to go for the frame rates as far as Demon's Souls has been going. I've seen a lot of reviewers have been going for that option. I personally went for the ray tracing in the fidelity and the 4K elements, really for the fact I wanted to see if there was a notable difference in terms of the look and feel of the game. When it came to, for example, Miles Morales, which we have a review up on the site already, there are, I guess, aspects of the game where you can see it in action. So specifically, I wouldn't call them cutscenes, but they're more walking scenes where you're kind of working your way through Harlem as Miles Morales. Sometimes during the day, sometimes as night, you kind of can see the steam coming off of the grates from the underground. Lighting is particularly good when you're swinging around from building to building, and it makes for great images that can capture in the photo mode. So there are aspects to it. I'm not too sure if we're getting the fully fledged next-gen experience just yet. So, again, I want to hold a full judgment, I guess, until a year from now when we have something, perhaps even something like Cyberpunk, which would potentially push the PS5 all the way in terms of what it's able to do. I know that everyone's quite excited about the God of War Ragnarok game, potentially what that could add to the mix as a real great next-gen exclusive for the PS5. So as far as the games available right now, there are a couple of nice ones, but I wouldn't say that there is enough to make you want to go and buy the console just yet. Those are, I guess, kind of my initial feelings about it, is that you've got a great piece of hardware. It is unfortunately very expensive, as is the case with the Xbox ones as well. And right now, there aren't really enough games for it.
There's not enough new games, because these also support backwards compatibility.
Yeah, so and I know that there's been a lot of columns that have been dedicated to as far as the getting next-gen ports for PS4 games. From what I've seen is that it's dependent on the game itself. So say, for example, something like FIFA 21. When I first got the PS5, I looked into my game library and I was able to download it for the PS5, but it was the PS4 version. Mm. The PS5 port for it is only coming, I think, in the first week of December. So I think it'll depend from publisher to publisher, from developer to developer, as far as when those next-gen ports will fully be available. I have noted, though, on the PS4 version of FIFA 21 that's running on the PS5, it is exceptionally fast. So loading matches, for example, it takes about 5 seconds for a match to – when you get to the pre-loading screen for FIFA 21, you can play these little mini games while you wait for the match to load. It takes literally 4 to 5 seconds. Previously on the PS4, it was taking anywhere from 15 to 20 seconds. I know that doesn't seem like a long time to wait, but no. It is a notable difference for someone that's been playing these kinds of games for a long time.
I think
go ahead.
I think that's one of the things that a lot of people, I've seen so many people say, oh, it doesn't feel like a big difference. I can tell you right now, as somebody who was very adamant many years ago that I would not move to SSD because I was young and stupid, moving to an SSD, and I think it's also notable here that we must mention, is that the PlayStation uses a different sort of technology in order to access data on the SSD. It makes a world of difference. That 5 seconds that you spend waiting it's completely, you don't even notice it. It's such a big difference.
Yeah, one thing I do need to note, though, about that SSD, there's so Sony have been really punting the fact that your game is going to launch a lot quicker.
Mm.
I have not found the actual games themselves launching far quicker compared to PS4. That said, again, I'm going to have to use FIFA 21 as an example, which is the PS4 version of the game. That launches very quickly. If, for example, I'm trying out the Miles Morales or Demon's Souls, it doesn't seem exceptionally quick. And if, for example, I switch out of the game and head to my homepage or go to Spotify or YouTube or Netflix or whatever and start switching between different applications and different aspects of the platform, fortunately, when I head back to the game, it takes me through the normal loading process. It's not, for example, as quick as what's been touted. Whether or not that's a problem with my interpretation of what Sony is saying, it remains to be seen. But it's, again, I'm not too sure if that's necessarily what's being advertised is actually what's available. But then again, I think we have to see down the line as far as what further updates we'll be able to unlock on that front.
In terms of storage, I also want to mention that PlayStation has been, well, not calling it cagey, but it's difficult to expand the storage on your PS5. So if you look at the Xbox Series X, you can just plug, USB external drive into it. And they also sell an external, no, it's not an external because it almost goes into the console, an expansion card. Remember those? They sell an expansion card that straight up just adds another terabyte. Now, that storage does cost more than 4,000 Rand.
About the same as the console. It's Series S, rather, the Series S. Yeah.
And the problem is that the PlayStation 5, both versions, only ship with a terabyte, which is a lot, but you have to remember that your OS takes up...
Yeah, it's not really a terabyte. It's actually 825 gigs. Yeah.
It's much less than that. And then games are just so big nowadays. If you get a brand new AAA game that's under 100 gigs, it's a real surprise. And I know some people have said, how many games do you really play that often that you need them installed all the time? Which, is fair. But it's just that on the PS5, it's a bit more difficult to expand your storage.
Well, right now, they
have Sony said they're going to address that, apparently.
Yeah, they've got plans, but plans are in the future. We're talking about right now. So, if you're storing every game you ever want to play and, backwards compatible titles and all of that, you might run out of space pretty fast.
Yeah, I think it really depends on the player. I was kind of looking at my library of PS4 games, and the ones that really stick out to me are the exclusive ones. So Ghost of Tsushima, I want to load on this PS5. I want to load Destiny 2. So again, I think it's really player specific as far as that aspect goes. But I do hear your point as far as Sony only waiting down the line to add the update as opposed to just having it ready out of the box, which seems like a bit of a misstep.
It's something else which just feels like these consoles were put out a bit too soon on top of not having that many exclusive games to play.
Yeah, I think we touched on it, I think, a couple of podcasts ago where perhaps these manufacturers, their hand was forced a bit in that Xbox kind of announced when theirs will be available, and then Sony's like, you know what, okay, cool, we'll also do it in holiday 2020.
Yeah.
And then COVID came, and then I think the wheels had already been set in motion. Mm. They couldn't pull them back because, to be honest, I think a launch 6 months or even 12 months down the line, and people don't have to worry about COVID, when people can go into the store and there's that fanfare and there are new next-gen titles ready at launch, a lot more, rather, that are ready at launch, that would have made more sense for me. Yeah. But then again, I'm not really paid to make those decisions.
I'm sure the accountants in both companies looked it all over and they made the decision. But for the consumer, it feels very lackluster, especially because, like, I think that the most anticipated game is Miles Morales, but you can just play that on PS4.
I should also note that that game is rather short.
Yeah.
You are paying, you're paying the full price. You're paying 1,200 Rand for the game. If you have, it makes sense to get it if you haven't played the original Marvel Spider-Man, because yeah, you can buy like a bundled version, I think, for about 1,350, 1,400.
Yes. Yeah, like
that makes a lot more sense.
Hang on, hang on, sorry, back up there. 1,200 Rand for a game?
Yes, yes, we're talking next-gen prices now.
1,200 Rand for a game?
Yeah. That is correct.
Yeah, that's no, I'm good, thanks. I'm staying with PC. This is free stuff here. What the hell?
Which is why I think the Xbox Game Pass that you guys have been talking about quite a bit, I think could be a real difference maker down the line.
Yeah, and... yeah, and then there's the whole issue of Nintendo Switch being a generation behind, but their games cost the same in South Africa. That's a whole other topic. Let's get back to
200 Rand for a game.
Why are people spending money? The cost of
I also wouldn't be surprised if those prices start increasing the more that gets actually put into these games.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to start hearing about 1.5, 1.6 for a new... for a new next-gen title.
Don't forget microtransactions, season passes, expansion.
Cyberpunk have smart delivery or whatever it's called, where you buy it on one and you can take it to another platform? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does.
Okay, so maybe that's a good idea then. Get your Cyberpunk on like Xbox 360 if it's available there, and then just transfer the license to your new console. Because 1,200 Rand, what is that?
Just make sure you have a lot of data on hand.
My goodness, I'm sorry. I can't get over the fact that games are now over 1,000 Rand. This is shocking to me.
I just got Star Citizen for free on Epic Store.
Oh, that's nice.
I played that this weekend. 100% free. I just need to download it. That's just. I just wanted to mention that. I've probably got like 14,000 Rand worth of free games from the Epic Store, but that's a discussion for another time. Go ahead.
So, Robin, I do want to ask more about the controller, because one of the things that I have looked at with temptation in my eyes are these new DualSense controllers. Perhaps not the white one, because, white peripherals never really work too well. But what's your experience been like with the DualSense controller?
Yeah, I've liked it quite a bit. Again, there are elements of it that are being used in the launch titles, but it hasn't been, I guess, used to its full capacity. One thing that Sony did is they added Astro's Playroom to the console out of the box, and it essentially is a platformer that allows you to test out all the different abilities that the DualSense controller has. You also get to experience a lot of the haptic feedback elements that the controller is touting now. It does have some interesting elements to it. In Miles Morales, for example, when you're just standing riding the train as Miles, kind of can feel the feedback as far as the train going over the tracks. You feel it every time that you start web-slinging. You can feel it every time that Miles's phone goes off and he gets a new notification.
Oh, that's cool.
So they're using it in different ways. I think Call of Duty, for example, is using it rather interestingly. The new triggers that have been developed for the DualSense controller, those are more pressure-sensitive, and apparently they have different levels of vibration and feedback depending on what gun you're using in the game.
Oh.
Again, I think these are very nuanced, really niche elements, and whether or not, I guess, your general player is going to be interested in them remains to be seen. I think there needs to be a title, I guess, akin to something like Heavy Rain, that is really controller-centric as far as the gameplay goes, for it to really make sense. And you'll probably only start seeing those again 12 months, 18 months down the line, when developers that are creating titles specifically for the PS5 and specifically using the DualSense controller and start playing around with things. Yeah.
Clinton, so, you wrote a story, I think earlier this week, saying that Steam was working on support for the PS5 controller. Yes.
So there is beta support for the PlayStation 5 DualSense already, they are working to add all those features that Robin just mentioned. That is great, but how big is the support going to be? It's all great for Steam to say we support all of this, but that's going to be on a game-to-game basis, right? We don't have extra playroom yet. I don't think a lot of developers are going to implement them. I think it's just going to benefit people who have that controller and they really like it and they just want to use it as a standard pad on their Steam game. Yeah. But do you want to say something, Brendan?
Yeah, that's exactly what I wanted to say, is that, like, for me, I'm more interested with the look and size of the controller and how it feels in the hand. I don't really care too much about the additional features like the trackpad and rumble and all that sort of nonsense. I just want a nice controller. And I currently use the PlayStation controller for PC, and I never use the touchpad. The only time I ever press the PlayStation button is by accident, and then it brings up Steam Big Picture, and I hate it. It's nice to see that Steam has support for it and that I don't need to download an extra piece of software from some stranger on the internet and hope that they aren't trying to add malware to my computer. So that's nice, at least, that they have the support. So if you're on a PC and you just want to use the new controller as a controller, how much do these things cost? Do we know what a controller costs?
$1.4, if I'm not mistaken.
Which is what, 400 Rand more than what the DualShock used to be?
Yeah. I mean, I picked up a DualShock for $700 in December or in May.
That's a good deal.
It was on sale. Yeah, it was.
You know what? I'm still using Xbox 360 controllers,
and that is a good controller, though.
They still work a treat. Like, they still work as well as the day I got them. Microsoft used to sell the controller for PC. I can't remember the exact name of the product, but you got one controller and then a USB dongle.
Yeah,
and you can plug as many of those controllers into your PC. Well, you can connect them because it's all wireless, and that worked perfectly. I've got three Xbox 360 controllers, and whenever someone comes over, when that was still a healthy thing to do, we'll just connect and it will work perfectly. I think every game just supports Xbox 360 controllers, and I've never actually owned a 360. The controllers are just great, so I bought the controllers.
Robin, let's move on a little bit to the user interface of the PlayStation. Has much changed there from the PS4?
So there are certain elements that have changed. I think the overall aesthetic is very similar. Sony like to go for that kind of ethereal look as far as their UIs go. The same thing applies here. The color scheme has changed a bit. They've gone for like a black and gold color scheme. There's also kind of, I guess, flecks or little sparks of light that kind of litter the screen as well. So it all looks very nice. I think the actual important element of the UI is that they've tried to make things very uncluttered as possible.
Uh-huh.
So on the PS4 in particular, things tended to get a little bit
out of control.
That's a good way to put it. There was a lot of stuff that was happening on screen, and it became difficult to kind of navigate it. So what they've done here specifically is that they've put a little taskbar at the bottom of the screen that you pull up when you press the PS button on the controller.
Okay.
And that allows you to access stuff like your uploads and downloads. Sorry, not uploads. Your downloads, see what's in your queue. You can, for example, toggle between different apps. So you can switch over to Spotify, YouTube, Netflix, whatever you want to do. You can also then pull up specific content as it pertains to a game. If I'm playing Miles Morales, for example, I can pull up that taskbar and I can see which missions still need to be completed And from there, I can launch into a specific mission. It still takes about 10 to 15 seconds, depending on the game, to load up. But you can actually jump into an element without having to navigate through the menu first, which is quite nice.
That is actually quite a big improvement. Like, so I have a PlayStation 4. I don't have it on me at the moment. I lent it to somebody, and they're still using it. But something that I hated was the user interface and just how cluttered it was. Like, I was looking for Netflix and you can't find it because there's 1,000 other icons that are in its way that look like the Netflix icon, because let's be honest, a black N isn't really like stand out, or black and red N. So to see that they've made changes to that to make things a bit more intuitive and make use of like things like the PlayStation button, that's really, really nice.
Yeah, they've also kind of partitioned games and media. So all your games will be in one tab, and your media, which is your Spotify, Netflix, YouTube, whatever.
Why was that?
Yeah, that's in there now.
That's obvious. That should have been there from the get-go. Anyway.
Yeah, I think for this UI, there's been a lot of, I guess, quality of life improvements over necessarily groundbreaking features that have been added.
Okay.
Robin, I want to know, how has – I know we talk about the controller, but – has that white finish gotten dirty yet? Because you've had it for a couple of weeks now.
Yeah, so...
I'm worried about that. And also the console, is like dust showing up on the white chassis or anything like that?
So for the controller, what I have noticed is, so on the underside, specifically where you hold the controller, there's that PlayStation pattern, which has all the different symbols, the X, the O, the square, the triangle. Mm. That specifically... after a couple of days of playing, that started to pick up some dirt. That's probably because I am a garbage person. That's very dirty. And yeah, so I noticed that was picking up stuff. When I was taking pictures of the controller for my review, I had to actually clean it down and wipe it down and make sure that it was clean, because I could actually notice there's some dirt that it's picking up. I'm also quite interested to know how that textured finish how it'll cope over the next 6 to 12 months, whether it will start fading. So I'm not too sure how that's going to cope over time. For the console itself, it doesn't seem to be picking up a lot of dust. What I have noticed, though, and this is potentially because I am picking up the console quite a bit for taking pictures and things like that. I'm moving it around a bit purely for the fact that I'm reviewing the device at the moment. Is that the central portion, which is almost like a dark navy blue that houses, I guess, the main elements of the console, that is a magnet for smudges and fingerprints, which isn't necessarily something you worry about if you're owning this console, but if you are reviewing it and taking pictures of it, you're going to be wiping it down. But yeah, I think that my kind of cleanliness issues for the console purely pertain to me having to take pictures of it.
Well, I'm also worried because I understand what you're saying. You're picking up more than usual. But I think in the next few months, you know, as people live with the console and, you know, you need to move it on your entertainment center and you need to move it here or there, or you take it to a friend's house or whatever, again, when that's fine to do, I think that dirt and stuff will accumulate naturally on its own. I was going to say for normal people, for people who aren't reviewing it. I think that stuff will appear just at a slower rate.
Yeah, for sure. And again, the white looks great out of the box, but as we know, it doesn't stay very clean for very long. So yeah, if PlayStation are willing to let me keep this for a few more months, I will let you guys know how dirty it actually gets.
That texture on it, Robin, do you think it's just a bit of a marketing ploy, or do you think it actually makes it feel better?
Whether or not it helps with grip, it's hard to say. The controller itself was fairly easy to handle already. It wasn't unwieldy in any way. The actual body of it is a lot thicker than the DualShock 4. Whether or not it takes time to get used to it, I think it really depends on the player. Again, I think that texture element is just a nice little design flourish more than a necessity.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just something that was done for looks more than form or function.
My question, Robin, is if I have the money right now and I don't have to
break the bank and I can comfortably afford this upgrade, should I upgrade to the PlayStation 5?
Well, firstly, kudos for having...
This is a hypothetical. I don't have 12 grand just lying around.
Yeah, so... I don't know if it's going to be controversial or not, but I'm going to say no. Purely for the fact that, again, we've touched on it multiple times now, that there aren't enough new next-gen titles to really get stuck into at launch. So, yeah, I think waiting 6 months down the line, potentially even a year down the line, isn't a dumb move by any stretch. We got to remember that the PS4 and the Xbox, what is it, Xbox One, mm-hmm. those are still getting titles. It's not like they aren't getting titles anymore. So yeah. You can still enjoy games. So holding off, in my view, especially given chaos of 2020 and people don't have a lot of money to spend right now. So I don't want to say you're wasting your money if you're buying it now, but you can easily wait another six months to a year and purchase the console then.
Yeah, I think my advice to people looking at buying this is wait until there's a game that you want to play. Save your money until then, and who knows? Like right now, the prices are quite high for these consoles. In 6 months, they might be a lot lower. In a year's time, they're going to be even lower than they are 6 months from now. So, yeah, I think that unless there's something that you absolutely must play, which is not Godfall, don't play Godfall. Everything I've seen about Godfall is terrible. I don't think that there's a reason to upgrade just yet. I mean, obviously.
So does that mean that you're going to be buying the God of War Ragnarok bundle?
Probably. I mean, like, here's the thing, right? Is that God of War?
And that's what I'm going to be buying. So,
God of War got me to buy a PlayStation 4. I mean, I didn't buy it; it was a gift. But I mean, it got me thinking about it really, really hard. So. Yeah, I think that would be the point where I would start considering one is when God of War comes out, because that was a really good game and the sequel hopefully is just as good. So
speaking of purchasing decisions to end off here, before we go, I do want to note that we have the regular PS5, quote unquote regular one. There is the digital version that doesn't have a disc drive. Robin, have you even used your disc drive yet?
I have not. I haven't had any to. Luckily, we've been given review codes, which are downloaded.
Yeah.
So, also, again, I think it's kind of the nature of what we do as journalists. We are given review codes much of the time now. Mm. I think it's been probably 2 years since I've been given a red label disc for review. Yeah, but again, unless you have like a wealth of PS4 games tucked away somewhere as physical discs, there isn't necessarily, I think, a big need for the optical drive version. I know, obviously, it's supporting Ultra HD Blu-ray, but then again, are people still buying Blu-ray DVDs at the moment, given all the streaming platforms that are available? So, yeah, it's a weird one.
But I just want to note something here, because there's a lot of parity between the PlayStation 5 regular, quote-unquote, edition and the digital edition in terms of price. I just want to dig up the price for 1 second. The regular one is $12,999, right?
Mm-hmm.
How much is the digital edition? I should have gotten this.
I think it's $9,999.
I think it's $10,999, yeah.
Yeah, so it's a 2,000 Rand difference. I don't know. Again, this is going to have to be a consumer... You know, you're going to have to look at what you do and look at the difference. And the reason I bring it up, aside from purchasing decisions, is the fact that the Xbox Series X and Series S, they have a big price difference, but it's a completely different story, because those two consoles are very different in terms of specs. For the PS5 and the digital edition, the only difference is the drive. Aside from that, exactly the same console. But for the X and the Series S, they are very different machines under the skin. And the price is just day and night. The Series X is $11,999. The Series S is $6,999. So that's a lot of money.
You know, if only we had those in for review, we could actually do a proper comparison. But maybe another time.
What's that?
I was just saying, maybe if we had those Xboxes in for review, we
I don't
could,
know what that is. Is that like, is that where you put your eggs?
Yeah.
Xbox Series X.
Yeah, but to not to steal your round off here, Robin, but it really feels like there isn't that much of a reason to pick these up unless you're the type of person who really gets off on having the latest thing in their homes and you can. Yeah. Again, I was going to say you can bring friends over and show off, but it's more like take pictures and send them to them. Like, hey, look at that. So yeah, it doesn't feel like a big jump like previous consoles have been. It really just feels like a small iteration. Well, a big enough iteration to warrant new hardware, but not a big enough one to be a real wow factor.
And I think that kind of boils down to the fact, again, that there aren't enough games to enjoy in it. I mean, we've seen a lot of the marketing around both the Xbox and the PS5. You know, talking about going to new worlds, and there's a lot, obviously, there's a lot of like marketing spiel that's happening there. But without the games, then I just have a really expensive piece of hardware sitting next to my TV.
That's playing old games.
Yeah, it's a. So I think, again, I guess almost to kind of round up the podcast is that. So wait a bit. You're not losing out on anything. You're not missing out on anything. You wait 6 months, wait for that must-play game. And this applies not just to the PS5. This applies to the Xbox Series X and S, in our opinion. Just wait a bit and see. This is really for early adopters, really.
Man, that seems to be the answer every time something comes out. I really want a piece of tech to come out and just blow everyone's socks off. And even though it has early adopter problems, it's still so compelling that you still convince people to buy it. It just seems everything's iterations nowadays. But I guess that's a problem when we don't have Moore's Law. It doesn't really apply anymore. Oh, well.
And that's going to wrap it up from us for this week. Thanks so much for joining us. If you are looking at buying a new console, heed what we've said, read some more reviews around the web, don't make a brash decision, especially right now given the state of the world. But as I said, that's going to be it from us. Thanks so much to Robin Chetty.
Yeah, anytime.
And Clint Matos.
Bye everybody,
and we'll see you next week. Cheerio.
Cheers.
Bye.
Sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.